Blog Talk Radio. To get to today, Donald Trump gave a couple speeches this week in Pennsylvania. He spoke a lot about trade, spoke a lot about economics, and he wasn't wrong. God damn it, he wasn't wrong. And the response from some supposedly liberal outlets has been disheartening. Look, I'm just keeping it real with you guys. I'm a little shook, and I do fear the Donald Trump presidency. Speaking of that, Nate Silver decided to give us another one of his genius predictions. Remember, this is the guy that said Donald Trump would never win the nomination. This is the guy who said the Cavs would not win the NBA championship. So his track record, not looking so good. But he gave us a percentage, which is Hillary Clinton's chance of winning. Oh, am I going to have some fun with that. God damn it, he's not what he used to be. I mean, what'd he get? 49 out of 50 states right in one election in 08. I think he got 50 out of 50. That might have been 2012. And now, I don't know, he just shit the bed, man. He shit the bed. And then later on, we have some great news on marijuana policy, and Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have a little something to say about Saudi Arabia being on the Human Rights Panel. So a lot of stuff to get to. Plus, again, if we have time later on in the show, hashtag Heterosexual Pride Day, which was on Twitter yesterday. we'll talk a little bit about that. I do have quite a bit to say about that. All right, let's get started here, and we'll kick it off with some stuff on the Trumpmeister himself. First, we go to the issue of trade. Donald Trump gave a couple speeches this week in Pennsylvania, and he went after U.S. trade policy. So, as per usual, he ripped NAFTA, he ripped the World Trade Organization, and then he went off on the TPP. And he caused a wee bit of controversy when he said this.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership is another disaster, done and pushed by special interests who want to rape our country, just a continuing rape of our country. That's what it is, too. It's a harsh word. It's a rape of our country.
So a lot of liberal outlets ran with this and used it to attack Trump. I mean, Huffington Post, for example, they had their header. So the main story on the page was Trump compares TPP or Trump compares trade deal to rape. I saw other outlets doing the same thing. And the idea that they were getting at is, oh, clutch your pearl, he said the word rape, and it wasn't to actually describe a literal rape. Therefore, you know, I don't know, anger, outrage. And I have to say, man, this is exactly what I'm warning people against doing, because if you try to run this kind of a campaign against Trump, he will destroy you. And just put it in perspective and call it what it is. I mean, oftentimes people on the right use the term political correctness to mask just being wrong about shit. But this is a clear example of just actual PC outrage. Like, you said the wrong word to describe something, therefore let's just pretend like there was nothing to the point you made. Except this is an instance where Trump is 100% right in what he's getting at about the TPP. So you could use this as a hook into a story about what's in the TPP that we know of from WikiLeaks and the provisions that have come out, and then you could discuss how bad it is and how progressives and liberals are right to be most against it, and how Donald Trump is now, you know, mimicking a left-wing position because he feels like he'd get elected better. He has a better chance of getting elected if he takes this position. You could use this as a hook into a serious policy discussion about why the TPP is bad, why Bernie Sanders is right on the TPP, a warning to Hillary Clinton, hey, you need to stay left on this issue, because if you don't, then Trump can outflank you on your left and he could beat you. But instead of doing that, what did they do? They just did the classic, "Ooh, you said the wrong word, I'm so angry." And it reminds me a lot of the ad that actually Republicans ran against Trump in the primary, where all it was a montage of him cursing. And they used it as, "Got him! Got him! Oh, he's so crass, and this is not okay. He's not a member of polite society. He's not a gentleman." Yeah, that only offends you. That only makes you angry. Normal people look at that and they go, where's the issue? It's an adult using adult words. Who gives a shit? It's not 1952 anymore. But that's the thing. When you misfire on your attacks on Trump, you're going to make him stronger. I mean, that's what it is. I'm not saying this because I'm on Team Trump. I fucking loathe Trump. I call him Terrorist Don because of the shit he says about the Geneva Conventions and killing civilians and torture. I'm not with him. I'm telling you this as a warning. Get serious in your attacks against him or he will become President of the United States. I'm going, oh, he said rape and TPP will rape the country and I'm so offended by your language. Instead of doing that, what you could have done is, oh, actually, when you look at the provisions of TPP, he's right that it's a huge problem for the country and we shouldn't do any more of these bullshit free trade deals. Why? Look at the policy provisions. So if you were to pass TPP, as the entire establishment wants to do, the entire Republican establishment and most of the Democratic establishment, all the Democratic establishment, only the Progressive Caucus and some actual progressive Democrats are against it. But TPP would yet again make it so that the United States loses jobs. Every other trade deal that we've done to this point has made it so we lose jobs. This would be no different. So we lose jobs, you drive wages down, you exploit labor in countries with poor human rights records and labor records. For example, Malaysia tolerates slavery. They're in this deal, so apparently our corporations want to exploit that slave labor. On that alone, we should all be against it. Brunei is in this deal. They just implemented Sharia law. Why would you want to take decent paying jobs in America and ship them over to a country that officially has Sharia law, therefore making them richer, therefore giving them more power and entrenching that Sharia law and solidifying it? Another example here, we've spoken about this ad nauseum, but under TPP, corporations can sue for lost expected profits. So they can just say, you know, hey, we think we were supposed to make X amount more, so now we want the governments to reimburse us. So just give us money. Okay, that's horrible. That's basically making it so that corporate welfare becomes, built into the system in a way it's never even been before. It's putting corporate hijacking into the deal as a matter of policy. Like, that's the norm. You can just have corporations rob governments. And then also there's the international tribunals where it makes it so that corporations and governments become on equal footing. They're equal legal entities. Now, that's crazy. The way it works is a corporation can function within a governmental structure, and obviously the governmental structure has authority over the corporations. That's why there's such thing as minimum wage laws and labor laws, child labor laws. Hey, you can't pollute this river, and they have to abide by the rules of the government. Well, under TPP, you can make it so that if there's a dispute, it goes to an international tribunal. The tribunal decides whether or not the government is right in passing said law and whether or not the corporation has to abide by it. So the corporation just says no, and they go to this tribunal. The tribunal could say, yeah, you don't have to abide by the rules of the government in the country that you're functioning in. That's fucking crazy. That really does set up like a new world order type scenario. And by the way, who's going to be largely responsible for picking the people that are on this international tribunal? The corporations. So when Trump says something like TPP is raping our country, it's fucking raping the world. He doesn't go far enough. So stop playing the PC outrage game of like, oh, I'm now going to defend the TPP because you said a word I don't like and I'm offended by and I'm uncomfortable with. Get the fuck over it. This is not what liberals and progressives are supposed to be about. I'm a liberal and I'm a progressive because we care about facts, we care about policy substance, we care about the issues. But if there's this, you know, wing of the progressive movement that all they care about is, you know, I'm going to press the outrage button and the offended button when you say the wrong word, well, then you're turning people off to being liberals and progressives because then they understand, oh, maybe you really don't care about the policy substance. You know, maybe as this guy attacks a trade deal which is disastrous, you'll just take the opposite position because you're just against him by definition. Just because he's Donald Trump doesn't mean he's literally wrong about everything. If Donald Trump likes pizza and eats pizza, does that mean that you have to dislike pizza? No, it can be good. Pizza can be delicious. Just because he's for it doesn't mean you have to be against it. And by the way, I don't even believe him when he says he's against the TPP, because he said he's against all these different trade deals, and he personally benefits from them. His ties are made in China, for example. So I don't believe him. He's a liar. But when he does the rhetoric against TPP, you know what? He's right. When you, just to posture, go against him, you make yourself look like an idiot because you abandon your principles the second somebody you don't like happens to agree with you. That's the stupid shit that Republican politicians do. Like when Obama comes out and says, you know what, I agree with this right-wing policy, and the right-wingers go, yeah, well, now we disagree with it. They look like idiotic toddlers when they do that because they are that. And now you're doing the same thing. Oh, you said the word rape in the context of being against TPP. I guess I'm now for TPP. There you go. You have your answer, guys. What does it take to make a liberal or a progressive be in favor of TPP? Donald Trump doing rhetoric against it. That's apparently all it takes, and it's monumentally pathetic. And if you continue to go down this path, you're making him stronger and stronger and stronger, and you're running a risk of him winning. All right, now let's go to another one on Trump here that unfortunately helps him. And I don't know, man. It's one of those things that, again, it gets me scared because if you want to get somebody who's smart to defend him, just have these people come out against him. So, I mean, like neoconservatives now lining up behind Hillary Clinton. Ooh, is that ugly. Oh, is that as ugly as it gets? Because, like, they think, like, ooh, look, that means that even these people agree that she's better. No, it doesn't mean even they agree that she's better. It means to bad people who have bad ideas, they like her ideas, meaning her ideas are actually bad. In Hillary's case, that's 100% what it is. They think she might be more hawkish and more controllable on foreign policy, so, like, yes, let's go with her. That's not good. It ain't good. All right, more. Let's do it. Talking Points Memo has a story here on a new enemy that Donald Trump made. They say, quote, a billionaire hedge fund manager known for contributing huge sums to Republican candidates cautioned Wednesday that Donald Trump's economic policies effectively guaranteed a depression. All right, let me pause there. So that was, you know, in line with what the headline was on Talking Points Memo. Like, a billionaire Republican donor warns a Trump presidency will lead to depression or something like that. So when I read the headline, I was like, oh, this is interesting. Let me read through it and see the arguments that are made, because I was expecting to actually agree with the Republican donor and go, that's true. Like, for example, Donald Trump said not that long ago that he would just make a deal on our debt, and he has no problem with letting the U.S. default on its debt. Okay, that is something that would lead to a worldwide depression. That is something that's not something we can risk. That's crazy. That's insane. That's lunacy. That shouldn't even be an option. That shouldn't be on the table. The dollar is the world reserve currency. It's, you know, safe harbor for investors around the world. If you blow this up, there's no safe investment. You're really talking about a global depression here. So I thought that that's the argument that they were going to make. No. Not the argument that this billionaire made. The argument this billionaire made is 100% wrong. So Paul Singer is the billionaire, and he said, "The most impactful of the economic policies that I recall him coming out for are these anti-trade policies. And I think if he actually stuck to those policies and gets elected president, it's close to a guarantee of a global depression, widespread global depression." Okay. Yet again, now I have to come out here and defend Donald Trump because the dumbass arguments you're using against him, that is nowhere near true. The United States was in better shape when we did protectionism, when we didn't have so-called free trade deals, which are just outsourcing deals, which shipped all our good jobs overseas. Look at what happened in Detroit, for example. I mean, we used to have great jobs there with car companies. Well, the car companies decided, hey, let's buy the politicians. Let's make it so that these politicians allow us to ship all these good jobs elsewhere so we could pay people less, so we have cheaper labor, we pad the bottom line more, we get richer, sure we screw over the American people, but who gives a fuck, and then everything will be great. And that's what happened. And you have NAFTA pushing us in that direction. You have the World Trade Organization pushing us in that direction. You have permanent normal trade relations with China pushing us in that direction. And the list goes on and on. Panama Free Trade Agreement, Colombia Free Trade Agreement. I mean, these are things that Democrats and Republicans, the establishment, agreed, oh, yeah, this is great. Let's sell this to the American people as if it's going to help them. And what happened? Every single time, more U.S. jobs got shipped elsewhere, and we drove down wages in the U.S., ticked up unemployment, factories shut down all over the place, and you piss the people off, and they should be pissed off, because the whole idea was to make the elites richer, the captains of industry richer, while everybody else gets fucked. So Trump comes along and he goes, you know what? And by the way, I don't believe him that he actually believes this, but he's riding the populist wave. What does he say? You know what? All these deals are bad. I think TPP, which is the next horrific trade deal, that's the rape of our country. So we need to stop with this. We need to go in the opposite direction. Yeah, this is one of the things that makes him popular. This is one of the reasons why he won in a Republican Party where everybody's like, oh, let's ship out more jobs. He goes up there, he's like, are you stupid? No, seriously, are you stupid? Like, are you slow? Why would you say that? No, I'm not going to cut Social Security. I'm not going to cut Medicare. And, yeah, I'm against TPP. I'm against these free trade deals. They've screwed over the American people. He comes out and says that, and what does the establishment do? Oh, they're so arrogant, and they're so smug, and they're so sure that everything is going good for everybody else because it's going good for them, that idiots like Paul Singer go out there and go, yeah, you know, I think that it would cause a global depression and it would be a downturn if we actually gave a fuck about American workers and implemented anti-trade policies. No! That's one of the few things that when Trump talks about it and uses his rhetoric on it, he's 100% right! So, I'm warning everybody out there. Note to the establishment. If you think that the establishment lining up behind Hillary Clinton makes her more popular, you're dead wrong and makes her less popular because nobody likes you. But they don't know that because they can't – they're blinded. They're blinded by their current situation and they're living in their own bubble. So they – I mean, Paul Singer thinks, wait a second, I'm doing great. So I just assume everybody in my circle is doing great. We're all rich. We're all hedge fund managers. Everything's going fantastic. I summer in the Hamptons. They just assume everybody else is doing well. They're not. They're not doing well. So when you use arguments like this, it comes across as bullshit because it is bullshit. And this makes people flock to Trump more. I mean, another example of this. You've had prominent neoconservatives, one after the other, after the other, after the other, all come out in favor of Hillary Clinton, do big announcements about it, and they act like this should help her. Like they think, no, seriously. If I come out and I say I'm for Hillary Clinton, well, that's going to be great. George W. Bush's Treasury Secretary came out in favor of Hillary Clinton and announced it as if people gave a fuck what he had to say and announced it as if he's popular and people agree with his take. Dude, nobody likes you. Neocons, nobody likes you. Nobody likes your unnecessary, stupid, ridiculous wars that massacre giant numbers of civilians that you're callous and don't give a fuck about. Nobody likes your war profiteering. For all the Republican billionaire hedge fund managers that are like, I will take a principled stand against Trump. Nobody thinks it's principled because it ain't. Because the actual reason you're against Trump is not the xenophobia, is not the bigotry, is not the crazy comments about let's bring back torture. It's not, hey, the Geneva Conventions is the problem. It's not, hey, let's kill civilians in the Middle East. You don't care about any of that shit. The one time you go, oh, this may be a problem, is when he says, maybe we should bring back jobs to the U.S. and not continue to outsource everything. Oh, now I'm outraged. Now let me say I'm against Trump. Oh, I'm so brave, aren't I? No, you're not brave. You're part of the fucking problem. So everybody in the establishment, all the neoconservatives, all the Democratic establishment hacks, all the Republican establishment hacks, the Republican billionaires who are like, oh, I'm against Trump. It doesn't mean dick because you're all against him for the wrong reasons. You don't make good arguments against him. Your arguments are not based in a genuine humanitarian concern for the world, and they're not based in real substantive policy disagreement because you think X, Y, or Z would be better for the American people. It's all based off greed. It's all based off greed and arrogance and stupidity and you living in your own bubble and you thinking the one area where Trump's rhetoric is right is an area where he's wrong. No, no, no. It ain't going to work, man. You're just making him stronger when you make these arguments. You're just making him stronger. Nobody likes you. Nobody should like you. You never gave a fuck about the American people. And you're turning this monstrous human being, Donald Trump, into somebody that looks appealing because you're an even bigger monster and you don't even fucking realize it. By the way, this guy is the founder of Elliott Management Corporation, a fund worth $27 billion that specializes in distressed debt acquisitions. Oh, $27 billion. And he specializes in distressed debt acquisitions. I wonder if more protectionist policies that slap tariffs on people who ship jobs overseas or try to do business overseas, I wonder if that would affect his bottom line, and maybe that's why he's against Trump. I wonder if he feels like Trump would prevent him from buying bad debt in second world and third world countries and screwing over their populations. I wonder if he fears that Trump would make it so that you get penalized if you do stuff like that outside the U.S. That's exactly what it is. He doesn't give a fuck about the American people. Give me a break. Okay. All right, let me do this NRA ad. Because this is interesting. The NRA spent $2 million on this Donald Trump for President ad. Let's watch.
People say they're not going to vote this November because their candidate didn't win. Well, I know some other people who won't be voting this year either. Hillary is president? No thanks. I served in Benghazi. My friends didn't make it. They did their part. Do yours.
The NRA Political Victory Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Okay. Stop. Donald Trump is actually way more politically savvy and clever than these idiots. Like, you guys, we've spoken about it quite a bit, but there are times when Donald Trump's strategy is spot on, where he pivots to the left of Hillary on economic policy, he hits her for corruption, he hits her on trade deals, sometimes he hits her on foreign policy and says she's too interventionist, though some other times he says she's not interventionist enough. I mean, he's a little confused, okay, but he actually, so far, has done better than I think any other Republican would have done against Hillary. I think Marco Rubio would have shit his pants and made a mess and been to the right of Hillary on everything, making people dislike him even more. Jeb Bush, same thing. So Trump is actually not that bad at campaigning and getting a message out there. Now, recently, Hillary's, you know, ticked up in the polls. He's ticked down a little bit. But I do think we're still going to have the yo-yo effect, and I do think, ultimately, it could end up being a close race. And certainly, throughout the rest of the campaign season, I think it will be the yo-yo, and I think it will be fairly close. These ads do not help Donald Trump. Okay, so the whole point of the ad, if you can't tell, is Benghazi! Benghazi! Gotcha! Gotcha! Yeah, no. So this ad comes out the same week the 9th investigation on Benghazi concludes. That's a real number. I'm not just, like, sometimes I use hyperbolic numbers as, like, a joke. No, that's literal. The 9th investigation into Benghazi, the results were released this week. What were the findings? There was no wrongdoing. Even under Republican reports, they were like, yeah. Well, we dug a little deeper and found the facts. There's no wrongdoing. There's even a line in there from the top lawyer that worked on the report that says something to the effect of the Department of Defense did everything it could in Benghazi. So there's these myths that just won't die, and they're so pervasive that, you know, what happened was Obama was aloof and nowhere to be found, and, you know, people didn't know where to go for direction. And then when they finally got to him, Obama was like, what are you going to do? Tell the troops to stand down. Like, these are things people actually believe. Like, oh, they were nowhere to be found. And then when they found them, they said, stand down. And Hillary Clinton, same thing. No, we will not go in and try to rescue people in this situation. People actually believe that that's the thing they did. Okay, that's totally made up. Totally made up. 9 investigations later, every single one, no wrongdoing, no wrongdoing, no wrongdoing, no wrongdoing, no wrongdoing. They did everything they could. People still go, ha ha ha. Benghazi. Benghazi. I don't even think at this point they know why they're angry. Like, there was a time when, because of all the myths, they could tell you, well, I think that they told him to stand down and blah, 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 blah. Now I think if you go up to a right-winger and go, explain to me what happened in Benghazi, exactly why you're mad. They would say, okay, these people died, blah, 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 and Benghazi. Okay, but then, so what happened, why the anger, Obama and Hillary Clinton? Benghazi. Okay, but what happened with the, like, what's the, what are the events that unfolded that led to, look, man, things happened, things under Benghazi, things happened that were bad. Benghazi, it was bad. They don't have anything. So what are they, so you guys got to understand, nobody goes after Hillary Clinton harder than I go after Hillary Clinton. I mean, you go back, type Hillary Clinton into the Secular Talk search box, it's probably 90% negative stuff, if not more than that, okay? So it's not like I'm averse to attacking Hillary Clinton. In fact, I attack her better than any Republican has ever attacked her, because I actually know the policy substance and the facts to attack her on. I know what she's actually guilty of and what she's really been wrong about. So I can give you a million and one reasons why my attacks are better than Republican attacks. But you have to be able to distinguish between a good attack and a made-up stupid attack. And this is a made-up stupid attack. Like, don't get it twisted. Right-wingers are still right-wingers. Right-wingers gonna right-wing. And what do right-wingers historically do? I don't know. Verbal diarrhea, make shit up, throw mud, hope it sticks, blah blah blah. I mean, these are the people who, their main thing against Bill Clinton was, ha! Got blown. Should be out of the office of presidency. So it wasn't like, hey, he did NAFTA. Bad. It was, blowjob! Because they actually, see, that's the thing. They're actually not that angry about the things they should be angry about. Like Hillary voting for the Iraq War, like her voting for the Patriot Act, like her favoring deregulation, like her favoring outsourcing jobs with these so-called free trade deals. They're not that mad about all that stuff because they love that stuff too. They voted for it. They voted for it. So what do? They have Benghazi. Ah, Benghazi. No, no, no Benghazi. Go read the fucking 9 reports, okay? Look at the conclusions of the 9 reports. They said no wrongdoing. So when you use that attack, you look like the fucking goofballs that you are. And I never thought I'd hear these words come out of my mouth, but why don't you sit down and let Trump take over, because he actually knows how to attack her better than your dumbasses do. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, now we go to the horrific side of Donald Trump and what he said after the attack in Istanbul. We got that and much more. Stay right there.
Like a damn gun sword.
Welcome back, bitches. By the way, if we end up getting pulled off Blog Talk Radio, which now is possible, thank the jackass who picked that last song for the break. If I'm not mistaken, they have one rule. The rule is it just can't be sexually explicit stuff. Or at least with the rating that we have, it can't be sexually explicit stuff. I could curse as much as I want. I could say anything. The only thing I can't do is play that song. Thanks, guy, whoever the fuck you were. All right. Now let's go to Trump again in the wake of the Istanbul airport terrorist attack. All right, let me set this up for you. I do have a clip. Donald Trump, in the wake of the Istanbul airport terrorist attack, has now quadrupled down, quintupled down, whatever the fuck it is at this point, on war crimes. Trump has quadrupled, quintupled, whatever comes after that, down on war crimes now in the wake of this attack. Let's watch.
Well, they asked me the question. I said, I'll answer that question. They said, what do you think about waterboarding? I said, I like it a lot, and I don't think it's tough enough. You know, we're living in medieval times. We have to stop it. We have to be so strong. We have to fight so viciously and violently because we're dealing with violent people, vicious people. We have laws. And the laws say you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do, you know, a lot, right? Their laws say you can do anything you want, and the more vicious you are, the better. So we can't do waterboarding, which is, it's not the nicest thing, but it's peanuts compared to many alternatives, right? So we can't do waterboarding, but they can do chopping off heads, drowning people in steel cages, they can do whatever they want to do. They probably think we're weak. We're stupid. We don't know what we're doing. We have no leadership. You know, you have to fight fire with fire. We have people out there
what's worse there. The chance of USA, USA for ideas that are the most un-American imaginable, or Trump's comments on their own. So, you know, I hate Hillary Clinton. I live in New York, so I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton. I'm going to vote probably for Jill Stein because the state is safe. It's going to go to Hillary no matter what the fuck I do. And I've said if I'm in a deep red state or deep blue state, I'm going to vote third party as the protest vote that I think is the right thing to do. But I always say that if I was in Ohio, for example, or Florida or a true swing state, I would hold my nose and vote for Hillary Clinton. Why? This. Now, people can counter and say, well, she voted for the Iraq War. The Iraq War killed hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians, and, you know, that's horrific. She's hawkish in her own right. No, that's all true. And I despise every interventionist bone in her body, believe you me. But let's stop pretending there isn't a difference between somebody who, upon hearing, we just killed 12 civilians in a drone strike that went awry, that there isn't a difference between the person who goes, I don't care, or that's good, and the person who goes, God damn it. That, I think, is the main difference between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So I don't know where to begin with this, man. We've covered similar stories 4 or 5 times. I don't know what's more gross, the chance of USA, USA for the most un-American ideas, or Trump's standalone comments. So let me put this into perspective for people. His idea is, very simply, let's copy ISIS. Hey, they're the bad guys, we're the good guys, so we got to do what we got to do. We got to get our hands dirty to beat the bad guys. So in order to beat the bad guys, let's become bad guys ourselves. Let's do the exact same tactics that they do and become just as immoral as they are because we have to defeat them. Except when you stoop to their level and you do their tactics, that's bad because the tactics are the problem. Nobody's a good guy or a bad guy by definition. Your actions define who you are. So what Trump apparently doesn't know is that the people at Guantanamo, for example, the people at Abu Ghraib who we tortured, at least, according to the Senate torture report, at least 20% of those people were innocent. The number's likely much higher, and that's just what they admit to. So what did we do? Well, we did anal rape torture, anal feeding torture, hypothermia torture, where you throw cold water on somebody and leave them in a cold cell. Somebody died, by the way, when we did that, and that person was totally innocent of any wrongdoing whatsoever. We do mock burials. We do physical violence against people. So we did all these forms of torture, which were jacked from a communist Chinese manifesto on how to torture. We call it enhanced interrogation. And then come to find out, many of the people we tortured were just innocent. In fact, probably most of them were, because we know how the people got to Guantanamo, for example. The Bush administration cut a deal with warlords in Pakistan and Afghanistan and told them to send us jihadists because we had just gotten attacked on 9/11. So what did those warlords do? It turns out warlords aren't very trustworthy. So they, who would have thunk it? So they rounded up people who were just people they didn't like, their enemies in the region, and they shipped them to us and said, yeah, they're in Al-Qaeda. So we ended up torturing people who were totally innocent. So, but see, that's what happens when you want to go down this path that Donald Trump wants to go down. People like to live in this Steven Seagal, Chuck Norris, idiotic movie world where we always get the right people when we torture people or when we do violence. It's always the right people. It's never the wrong people. Under the Obama administration, nobody would argue Obama isn't more intelligent than Donald Trump. Under his administration, what's the rate of getting the wrong target with drones? 90%! That's according to internal government memos. This is from the drone papers, which were recently leaked. So under Obama, we 90% get the wrong people with drones. You trust Donald Trump making these decisions? You trust Donald Trump picking out who to torture? You think he really gives a fuck and he'll do a thorough investigation as to who is Al-Qaeda, who is ISIS, who isn't, who's an innocent civilian? He doesn't give a fuck. This is the guy who said ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. He already has that mindset of, guilty enough, they're Muslim. You don't think he'd be the exact same when it comes to torture and when it comes to war and when it comes to violence? Of course he would be. And then on top of all this, dude, these are the people who claim they love the Constitution. The Constitution protects from cruel and unusual punishment. Don't you ever come out again and say, oh, I believe in the Constitution, I believe in the Constitution, I believe in the Constitution. It's not debatable, not debatable, not debatable. It's not a debatable document. It is what it is. We got to have a literal interpretation of it. Okay, well, there is the government cannot administer cruel and unusual punishment. By doing waterboarding, or worse, as Trump says, by doing torture, that is cruel and that is unusual. Furthermore, there's no due process. There's nothing set up in place to try to figure out whether or not we have the right people, which is how we got ourselves into a mess where we got all these people who turned out to be totally innocent. So the thing about Trump that's so scary is he's taking all the things that, to one extent or another, were done to a lesser degree under the Bush administration, and yes, continued under the Obama administration, with CIA black sites, with the 90% drone death rate. He's taking all of that, which honestly is a national embarrassment, and it's a shame that we did it. And yes, it does help jihadists because it helps them recruit by using these things as messaging and propaganda against the United States. He's taking it and he's going, yeah, I don't care about any of the downsides. That's the right thing to do. That's the moral thing to do. That's the just thing to do. That is the most American thing to do. His audience chants USA, USA, as we talk about how we are going to violate international law and we are going to commit war crimes. And, hey, we get the wrong people? Who cares? Guilty enough. Guilty enough. This is a guy who said the Geneva Conventions is, quote, the problem. This is a guy who says we need to torture, quote, even if it doesn't work. He said that at other times. This is a guy who went on Fox and Friends and said we need to go after the families of ISIS. Not just ISIS. The families of ISIS. So kill civilians in the Middle East. That's one of the things he said. And he didn't. Wasn't backpedaling from it. He was, that's what I want to do. Even the Fox hosts were like, oh, this is the guy you want to vote for and you want to take a fucking chance on? This is the guy you want to take a chance on. This monster by becoming this monster. Don't become the devil that you're trying to avoid. ISIS is bad and they are horrific and they're horrific because they do things like beheadings and torture and all these horrible actions. A solution to that isn't to do our own beheadings and our own torture and our own horrible actions. That's not a strategy to defeat them, Donald. That's a strategy to become them. We're America. We're better than that. Okay. All right, now let's go to Nate Silver. Actually, first let me do the presidential debates issue. So there's a big question floating around at the moment about who will be allowed in the presidential debates. Trump and Hillary are literally the most disliked candidates to get their party's nomination ever. Ever. Hillary's unfavorables are above 55%. Donald Trump's 70%. So nobody really likes him. Like, the people who voted for them, it was just like, okay, I'll go. I guess this person. And everybody else is like, oh, no, never. Why would you pick that person? So, I mean, if there was ever a time for a third-party outsider to really make an impact, it's now. So then the question becomes, what's needed to get into the debates? Well, Reason.com explains here, you need to receive an invitation to participate in the debates from the Commission on Presidential Debates, a private, nonpartisan 501c3 organization that has sponsored the general election presidential debates since 1988. The CPD is not a government entity, nor does it receive government funding. But it is a creation of the two major parties, co-chaired at its inception by both the Republican and Democratic Party's national chairman. Ah, so that's the dirty little secret, and that's the trick that they do, where the Republican Party and the Democratic Party come together and they say, look, we got a pretty good thing going where it's either you guys who win or it's us guys who win. So how about we just don't allow anybody who's an outsider to get into this and bust this whole thing up? Man, that's low. So for those of you who don't know, the debates used to be held by the League of Women Voters. And then, like they said, in 1988 here, they switched over. Now, early on when they switched over, they were still allowing independent candidates because they didn't think it was, you know, anybody would get traction and it would be an issue. But then eventually Ross Perot came around and he got the most votes any independent candidate had ever gotten. And then the Democrats and the Republicans go, all right, now we're going to shut this bitch down, because they didn't want to have, you know, a third person ruin the two-party system here where they have a lockdown on the system. So they said, okay, now we're going to make it super hard for any independent candidate to get in here, any third-party candidate to get in here, and we're going to pretend like that's not what we're doing, even though that's what we're going to do. So what do? They go, oh, no, we just came up with the objective criteria in order to get you in. So what's part of the criteria? You need to get at least 15% in the polls. There's one major problem with that, though. Oftentimes, the polls don't even include the third-party candidates. I mean, you want to talk about a catch-22. You got to get to 15% to get in. Okay, great. Let's get my name in the polling. Nope. No can do. So it is just designed to keep this two-party fraud going and to keep the American people in the dark, them from knowing that they have other choices. So what should happen? Well, what should happen is obvious. You have the Libertarian Party candidate, Gary Johnson, is running. In the few polls he's included in, he gets about 10%. Jill Stein, Green Party candidate, is running. I believe the most recent polls have read about 4% or so. So first of all the polls should include these people. Second of all, even if they don't get to 15%, let them in. They're on the ballots in so many different states. I believe Gary Johnson's on in 32 and likely to get on in many more. And then you have Jill Stein. I don't know how many she's on, but I know that she's on a lot. So it's not like they're just running for shits and giggles here. They're serious people with a serious message. And at a time when everybody despises the Democratic and the Republican candidate, to not include them in the debates would be journalistic malpractice on the part of the networks that are having the debates. So for everybody, for the sake of the United States of America, for the sake of the world, for the sake of sanity, for the sake of policy substance, Gary Johnson and let Jill Stein into the debates. Look, I get it. If there's some jackass who's pretending to run for president, but he's not really running for president and, you know, never did anything, just announced and filled out three forms of paperwork, yeah, I'm running, as a joke. Yeah, of course you don't let that person in. Jill Stein is serious. Gary Johnson is serious. We know that they're serious. Okay, we know they're serious. Let them in the debates. Let them in the debates. This shouldn't even be a question. I mean, these are two people. By the way, I have disagreements with both of them, but they're both intelligent people. They're both rational people. They have, you know, respected records. They have something to say. Let them in and let them make their case, man. You know, libertarians, as I'm sure almost all my audience knows, you're talking about a party here or an ideology that's liberal on social issues, conservative on economic issues. Look, that's not my cup of tea, but for a lot of people, it is. So let him in the debate. Let him make his case for Jill Stein. You know, people... so many people in the progressive base, the liberal base, are so disheartened that it appears like, oh, what are we going to do? Hillary Clinton is what it is. What are we going to do? Hillary Clinton. They're so angry about that because Hillary does not represent their values. She voted for the Iraq War. She voted for the Patriot Act. She was in favor of deregulation. She was in favor of NAFTA. She pushed for TPP 45 times. People look at this and they're like, it's not really a liberal, not really a Democrat. I want another choice. Well, Jill Stein is not only another choice. She's actually to the left of Bernie Sanders on some issues. She's to the left to the point where she might even be to the left of me. But as I've said before, in the context of the U.S., I have no problem voting for somebody more liberal than me because they're not going to get everything they want anyway because there's obstruction built into the system and checks and balances built into the system. So maybe the compromise position becomes with my positions that I actually prefer. So there are other options. We need to know there are other options. Not everybody's a political junkie like me and like you guys. So
you know, CNN, whoever the fuck is hosting the different debates. Let's wake up here. Let's do the right thing. Let's get them out there because we have a system that is ripe for a third-party candidate to make a run at this thing. And by the way, don't do any half-measure bullshit. They'll say, okay, we'll allow Gary Johnson but not Jill Stein. Okay, we'll allow Jill Stein but not Gary Johnson. No, allow them both. Do the right thing. Okay. All right, let's go to Nate Silver. I'm going to have some fun with this one. So Nate Silver really hasn't been doing very well in recent times. He would even tell you that. His predictions have been a little off. He said that there's no way that Trump would win the GOP nomination. We know how that turned out. And look, a lot of people make the counter-argument, nobody could have saw it coming. That's not true. You know who saw it coming? Don't believe me? Check YouTube. I did a segment when only three states had voted. Three. Out of 50. And what did I say? It would be a minor miracle if Trump didn't win. I said it's overwhelmingly likely he's going to be the nominee. Okay, so it's not true that nobody saw it coming. Many people saw it coming, myself included. There are others, by the way, who predicted it even before I did. So, you know, everybody deserves their credit here. A lot of new media people, a lot of journalists saw it coming. Who didn't see it coming? Nate Silver, who used to have a stellar record in 2008 and 2012. He was amazing. He got almost everything right. So he said Trump would never win, dead wrong. And then he said, here's another one I love. There's no way the Cavs would win the NBA championship. Now, to be fair to him, you know, they were down 3-1, so it did appear like, oh, God, it's almost certainly over. But we know what happened. We know what happened. They ended up winning. So in many ways, again, he would even admit that I've been off recently. Well, that doesn't stop him from making more predictions. Here he is on the general election.
Probabilities. So what are the odds you're putting on the race right now?
So right now we have Hillary's about a 75 or an 80% favorite. We have different versions
of
the forecast you can look at. So here's how to think about it. We're kind of at halftime of the election right now, and she's taking a 7-point, maybe a 10-point lead into halftime. There's a lot of football left to be played, but she's ahead in almost every poll, every swing state, every national poll.
79% chance! Hillary has a 79% chance of winning. That is adorable. So let me remind you guys of something here. When Nate blew a bunch of big predictions in the primary, he actually, to his credit, wrote a mea culpa and tried to explain why he was so wrong. And one of the points he made was this, quote, Trump's nomination is potentially a point in favor of polls-only approach as opposed to the fundamentals model. All right, so for those of you who don't know what that means, it's actually very simple. He has a bunch of factors that he sprinkles into his polls analysis, which he thinks gives him a more accurate prediction. You know, whether you sprinkle in some historical factors or some trends when it comes to, hey, how often has a Democrat won back-to-back versus, you know. So there are other things to factor in than just the polls, according to Nate Silver. And when you sprinkle in those factors, you get a more accurate prediction. Except you don't. Because as he admitted, when he was wrong time and time again, he went, look, maybe this is actually an indicator that if we went by just the polls approach, polls-only approach, we would do better than coming up with our prediction, which is based on other factors, because apparently we miscalculated the other factors and we didn't weigh them properly because we were wrong in so many instances. So he just said polls-only is better. And now he comes out here and says 79% chance Hillary Clinton wins the general election. Hey, Nate, care to show me that poll that has Hillary Clinton at 79% chance? Oh, you can't because it doesn't exist. So much for your, I guess, polls only is better idea. You didn't use a poll for this one. You pulled this number straight out of your anus. So, unlike Nate Silver, I do my analysis based on
overwhelmingly, it's 98% based on polls. If I sprinkle in historical, you know, facts or factors, it accounts for a tiny percentage of what my actual prediction is, because the polls, I think, indicate the best, because it's actually empirical research, that crazy thing. So let's take a look at all the recent polls to get an average of how Hillary Clinton is doing versus Donald Trump. So this is the Real Clear Politics average, which takes all the respected polling organizations, puts them together, and then gives you the average and tells you what the state of the race really is. So according to the Real Clear Politics average today, based on all the credible polls that came out recently, Hillary has a 6-point lead. So, Nate, you know how to not make an ass of yourself and how to stop falling flat on your face? Go with 56%. Just a thought. You said polls only is better. Here's polls only. Hillary has a 56% chance of becoming the next president. But no, I, Nate Silver, will use unempirical means, as I say they're empirical, and come up with 79%. Okay, beyond ridiculous. You know, my prediction actually is Hillary has a 66% chance today. Because unlike Nate, I don't make shit up. And I will give you one more warning here at the end of this, which is what he can't take into account is how they run their campaigns. So I can sprinkle that factor in. Now, again, I overwhelmingly go by the polls. I just told you the average is 56% that Hillary wins. I'm telling you that's what I think Hillary's chances are right now. She has a 56% chance of becoming the next president. But what he neglects is he can't weigh, hey, what's up with the populist fervor in the country right now? What's up with this feeling against trade, for example? You know, what's up with Brexit, man? A lot of the experts, I don't know what Nate Silver said, but most of the experts said, aha, the stay campaign is going to win. What happened? Because they're in their own little bubble, even though they think they're being empirical and objective. No, if you actually look at what's going on in the country, and you look at how they're running their campaign, Hillary Clinton clearly moving to the right, alienating the voters that she needs. Bernie supporters, over 50% of them say, I'm not interested in Hillary. Instead of trying to get those voters, instead of trying to get left-leaning independents, she's appealing to the right, people who are not going to vote for her. The only Republicans who are going to vote for her are establishment Republicans, the tiny, tiny little percentage of them that are neocons in Washington and are rich. So she's not appealing to the people she needs. Millennials don't like her. Independents don't like her. She's running to the right, and what's Trump doing? Trump's going left. He's going left on trade, for example. He's going left on economic issues. He's hitting Hillary's corruption. How did you factor that in, Nate? You didn't factor it in. Because you're not more empirical. You're less empirical. You just told us Hillary has a 79% chance of being the next president. That is beyond preposterous. No, let's go with numbers that actually make sense. I think Hillary has a 56% chance because the polls say she has a 56% chance. And another prediction I'm going to make right now is that will continue to go back and forth. Hear me now, quote me later. There's going to be another poll that comes out that says Donald Trump is leading at some point. It's going to come out. Hear me now, quote me later. So, Hillary, 79% chance of winning. You made that up. That's not empirical. That's not objective. You made that up. Show me the poll that says that. You don't have it. You don't have a poll that says that, because there isn't a poll that says that. Even though you admitted in your mea culpa, polls only is probably a better approach. What happened to that? No, you are just as subjective and blinded as the pundits that you originally got famous off of ripping, and rightly so, because you were more empirical than them. But you know who's more empirical than you? I am. I've been more accurate this entire election. Don't believe me? Go back and look at my predictions. Almost all my predictions were right, and the ones I got wrong, he also got wrong. And I was right more than he was. So 79%, that's made up, Nate. That's made up. Your forecasting fundamentals approach, in other words, I come up with my own subjective bullshit and then add on to the polls, that's ridiculous. So I say 56% chance of winning because the polls say 56% chance of winning, and I guarantee you we're going to have the yo-yo effect. It's going to go back and forth. At times it's going to be super close. Why? Because I can see how they're running their campaigns, and I actually know a thing or two about politics,
whereas you know numbers, except apparently you know the numbers, and then you like to fuck it up by adding in other factors that you don't gauge properly. Okay, let's take a break. When we come back, I got a lot more great stuff for you. Big news on the issue of marijuana legalization. Don't want to miss that. And then we got some heinous comments about gays from the lovable Brian Fisher. Stay right there.
That'll be it. All right, we're back, guys. Real quick show note. So next week I'm actually closing on the new studio. So new studio is happening. There's a giant, ridiculous, obscene renovation that's going to go down. That's going to require my time to be all over the fucking place. Like, I'm going to have to be doing a bunch of stuff there. I'm going to obviously have to keep the show going, do a bunch of stuff here. That's going to be a pain in the ass. So I'm just letting everybody know in advance here. For probably starting next Thursday. So there's going to be no show next Thursday because I got to sign a trillion contracts. And I got to figure out exactly what's going to go on next week with the show, what days we have it, what days we don't. But just expect from next Thursday and, like, for 10 weeks, from then and on, it's going to get a little weird. So, like, sometimes I'll be doing hour-long shows as opposed to hour and 30 minutes. Sometimes I'll be missing some shows because I have no choice except to miss the show because I got to do a bunch of stuff involving the renovation. So it's going to be a pain in the ass for me, which means it's a pain in the ass for you. There's still going to be a shitload of content that'll be released on the YouTube channel, obviously. But the live show is going to get hectic. So sometimes I'll have to move things and lower the time frame and this and that. And it's all because we're going to be doing the renovation and the new studio is happening. So that's a quick program note for you there. Also, if you haven't yet, grab your Secular Talk shirts. We're doing a limited time Secular Talk shirt drive, booster.com/Secular Talk shirts. You can check them out there. We got the first generation. We got the second generation. Half the proceeds go to Wolfpack to get money out of politics. Half the proceeds go to Lilith Penn, who does some great work for Secular Talk. And $0.00 goes to me, which is actually great. I wouldn't have it any other way because I love doing these shirt drives, and I love the cause. I love that we get a little something for Lilith, and I love that we end up raising some money for Wolfpack, man. So if you want to try to help the struggle, help the fight, booster.com/secular talk shirts. Check it out. We're flirting with 90 shirt sales for each, the old and the new one. Get us over 100 by the end of today, you bastards. All right. Let's continue here. We got some good news on the issue of marijuana. Reuters has some great news for us here on the issue of marijuana. They say Californians are set to decide whether to make recreational marijuana use legal after the California Secretary of State's office said on Tuesday the issue could be put up to voters in the November ballot. The proposed Adult Use of Marijuana Act, which is supported by Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, among others, would allow people aged 21 and older to possess as much as an ounce of marijuana for private recreational use and permit personal cultivation of as many as 6 marijuana plants. The measure would also establish a system to license, regulate, and tax sales of marijuana while allowing city governments to exercise local control over or disallow commercial distribution within their borders. So, I'm going to make a prediction now. This is a pretty bold prediction, but I don't give a fuck. I'm going to make it anyway. If this passes, California officially has recreational marijuana. Now, as of right now, they have medical marijuana, and it's a really loose system. So, hey, doc, I have a backache. Yeah, whatever. Here's the thing you need. Go get some weed. So, like, it's a loose system now, but still, it is officially not recreational marijuana in California. If we get to the point where California has recreational marijuana, it's over. It's over. The fight's over, which means eventually there will be legal marijuana at a federal level. So, at that point, it would just be too much of a contradiction to ignore. So we have Colorado, Washington State, Alaska, and Oregon, I believe, 4 states, have legalized recreational marijuana. Now, the federal government, admittedly under a Democratic president, they kind of sort of look the other way a little bit and ignore the fact that federal law has marijuana as illegal. And the states have said, we have legalized it in our borders. But if anybody knows anything about the Constitution, they know about the Supremacy Clause. Federal law overrides state law. So technically the federal government, if they so choose, if they wanted to, they could just go in and say, we're shutting down all this recreational weed in every state that has it. Now, again, they haven't done that under the Obama administration, and recently Obama's been releasing more nonviolent drug offenders. It's an area where he's doing a decent job.
So if California falls and you add them to the list of states that have recreational marijuana, you're past the point of no return. You're past it. You can't, like, as of right now, I wouldn't put it past a dickhead president like Trump. If he wants to, he could come in and just say, yeah, shut it all down. And they can do that. They have the legal authority to do that, and the states have no way, no recourse. I mean, they could sue, but they'd lose. So once you add California to the mix, though, it's such a big state, and the industry is so large on its own that you can't. No, the backlash would be overwhelming if they legalize weed and the federal government tries to say, no, we're going to shut it all down everywhere. Inconceivable. And then when you add the polls into the mix, at least 58% of Americans say it should be legalized for recreational purposes. 58% majority. In fact, there might be some new polls that have it over 60%. So when you put all the things together, it would be the case that marijuana is the new gay marriage. And that marijuana legalization, that the tides of history and the trends of history are moving so strongly in this direction that it's a train you can't stop, man. Snowball effect has taken over, and it'd be over. It'd be game, set, match. That would be a fantastic thing. And understand, like, we talk about the tide of history, the trends of history often, but because of moneyed interest, these trends of history are against us on economic issues, against us on trade issues, you know, against us when it comes to a living wage, decent middle-class income, because the corporations own the political system. But something that's overlooked oftentimes is that you have a lot of corporations are actually on the side of liberals when it comes to social issues. Now, it gets a little complicated because not all social issues are viewed the same, but like on gay marriage, for example, now there's been a total reversal. The people with all the money, the corporations, are almost across the board on the side of liberals, and we won on that. So wherever the money is, usually you end up winning. As soon as the marijuana industry gets big enough to crush the forces that are trying to stop it, we're probably at the tipping point now, then that's it, man. Matter of time. It's just a matter of time. So the tides of history stay with liberals and progressives on social issues. They're still against us on economic issues. Wouldn't it be great if we won on both fronts? But this would be such a gigantic win. So Californians, it's up to you. The only thing that could stop it, I think, is if they do the tricky bullshit that they did, like with, I think it's Proposition 8, when it came to gay marriage a while back, where they worded it so that it is purposely confusing. And people didn't know which is for gay marriage, which is against gay marriage. It was made so confusing, people didn't know. And then also you had, at the time, organized groups against gay marriage, a lot of religious groups, and so it ended up losing. The only way they could defeat it this time around, recreational weed in California, is if they do these kind of tricks. So we have to be very smart and vigilant in how they word these things and the kind of campaigns that are run, because it would be fantastic for them to win, and then we move closer and closer to a better position, more freedom, more liberty on an important social issue. All right, now, let's go to Brian Fisher. On the anniversary of the Supreme Court case that legalized gay marriage, which was very recently, fundamentalist Christian radio host Brian Fisher had a message for us.
So yesterday was the anniversary of the Obergefell decision. This is when the Supreme Court, with absolutely no constitutional, legal, moral, or ethical foundation, imposed homosexual marriage on the entire country. And I said at the time, and I say it again, that day, June 26, 2015, is a date that will live in infamy. Just as the Pearl Harbor date is a date that will live in infamy, so this day on which same-sex marriage was imposed on the United States against the will of the citizens is a date that will live in moral infamy. So, you know, my contention is that what moral jihadists did on June 26, 2015, what they did to the twin pillars of truth and righteousness, the same thing that the Muslim jihadists did to the World Trade Center on 9/11. So moral jihadists took down the twin pillars of truth and righteousness, just like Muslim jihadists took down the Twin Towers on 9/11.
Gay marriage is like a 9/11. Oh, goodness. So he keeps saying this. He tweeted about this the other day. That, the anniversary of the gay marriage decision is a day that will live in infamy. Okay, that's true if you interpret it as the exact opposite of what he means. So he's like, oh, yeah, this is a bad day. It'll be a big day, man. It's a famous day. So he thinks, oh, for bad reasons it's famous. No, it's famous in the same way that, like, the day the Civil Rights Act is famous. People go, oh, that's great. More equality, more freedom. Wonderful. God, his moral compass is so backwards and so skewed. He compares it to Pearl Harbor. Day that will live in infamy, just taking it from that. It's like Pearl Harbor. God, it's like killing innocent people. That's what gay marriage is like. Goddamn gay people. He says also, it's against the will of the people. You have no clue what the fuck you're talking about. Go look at the polls for gay marriage, man. Go look at the polls back then for gay marriage. It was already an overwhelming majority in favor. 58%, 60% thereabouts. So, but he doesn't care about facts. He doesn't care about information. He doesn't care about data. He has an agenda. He'll just twist everything to fit what his already held beliefs are. And then he goes as far as to call them moral jihadists. People for gay marriage are moral jihadists. Okay, think about how twisted that logic is. Dude, you know what jihadists are? Massively, extremely, incredibly anti-gay to the point where they kill gay people. And you're comparing the people who are pro-gay, so the total opposite on the political spectrum, to them. No, Brian, I hate to ruin it for you, buddy, but if anybody's closer to jihadists on the political spectrum, because you have an anti-gay fervor, now you want to kill them, admittedly, but you really hate them, it's you! You agree way more with fundamentalist Muslims than liberals do, who have been pushing for gay rights all along! God, he's such a crazy person. He said, you guys have no clue how much I hate using the O word. That's offensive. Because what does that mean? Like, oh, you're offended, so you don't like something. But that doesn't matter. Is it true or is it false? What is the thing? Is it accurate or not? Because if you're offended but it's accurate, piss off. I don't care. But this is an instance where he's obviously wrong and incorrect, and it's offensive. Because you're comparing consenting adults not hurting anybody, doing whatever they want, gay people getting married, you're comparing that to 9/11. You're comparing that to literal jihadists, terrorists who want to kill people. Again, your moral compass couldn't be more fucked up and couldn't be more skewed because you're a fundamentalist Christian and you fully drunk the Kool-Aid. Okay. Now, we go to Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch for a warning that they have. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have called on the United Nations General Assembly to, quote, immediately suspend Saudi Arabia from the UN Human Rights Council. I mean, that should be the most obvious thing ever. Why the fuck are they on there to begin with? So RT explains here, Saudi Arabia has committed gross and systematic violations of human rights during its time as a council member, and it has used its position on the council to shield itself from accountability for its violations in Yemen, the two human rights watchdogs wrote in a joint letter to the UN on Wednesday. The two organizations said they documented 69 unlawful airstrikes by the coalition, some of which may amount to war crimes, that took the lives of at least 913 civilians and hit homes, markets, hospitals, schools, civilian businesses, and mosques. The human rights NGOs also stressed that the Saudi-led coalition used internationally banned cluster munitions in 19 strikes, some of which also targeted civilian areas. So, again, this is the most obvious thing ever, man. Saudi Arabia is one of the biggest human rights abusers on the planet. Not only with what they're doing in Yemen, as we've discussed in detail, they're killing civilians. They don't care. In fact, that's the point. They're arming Al-Qaeda on the ground in Yemen because they're against the Shia Houthi rebels that much. Not only do they do that stuff,
Look at what they're doing in their own borders. They behead people for sorcery, apostasy, craft, drug smuggling. They do beheadings in the public square. This is, it's not a question as to whether or not this is a country that abides by basic human rights. They say all atheists are terrorists. On that alone, debate over. What the fuck are they doing on a human rights panel? Well, the answer is simple. Business as usual, baby. So, you know, the West has dealings with them for oil, among other things. So since that's the case, hey, you know, we'll look past your human rights abuses because you're on the good guy team. So you are by definition a good guy no matter what you do. And even if it's systemic, hey, whatever, it's all right. You're with us, so nobody pay attention to it. It's great. No, it's not great. Everybody who's a horrific human rights abuser should be called out for it, whether it's Saudi Arabia, whether it's the U.S., whether it's Israel, whether it's North Korea, whoever the fuck it is. And the idea that we have some of the worst abusers leading the human rights panel, it's beyond preposterous, and it honestly makes a mockery of the UN. So if you want people to take it seriously, maybe do the right thing and don't make bullshit nepotism deals and business deals behind the scenes and pretend like it's legitimate when we all know it ain't. Got about 7 minutes left. Let me do the story on Heterosexual Pride Day. So hashtag Heterosexual Pride Day was trending on Twitter yesterday, and it was causing quite a stir. Now, admittedly, the person who started it was kind of being tongue-in-cheek about it, but there were some people who decided to take it seriously and run with it and make it this really serious thing. So later on, people saw that, and they responded to it, and then it was kind of a mix. It was an amalgamation of people who were for it, and people who were like, seriously, this is what we're doing, Heterosexual Pride Day? So this leads to a broader discussion, and I think a really interesting discussion, and one where there are heated disagreements, and there are people who are passionately on one side or the other. And to me, so when I look at something like hashtag Heterosexual Pride Day, first and foremost, let's get the obvious out of the way. Should you be allowed to do it? Yeah. What the fuck's the... I don't see the debate there. I don't see the question. This is a basic matter of free speech and free expression. You can say whatever the fuck you want to say. It, like, the idea that some people think some people want to censor it or ban it or... No. I haven't seen anybody make that case. So, should you be allowed to participate? Hashtag Heterosexual Pride Day. Of course. If you believe in free speech, you believe in it for everything across the board. I mean, the only exceptions are what? Libel, slander, and direct threats of violence. This is none of that. So obviously you have the right to participate in this thing. Is it something that is rational? Is it something that makes sense? Because the argument people make is, well, if there's a gay pride day, why can't we have a heterosexual pride day? Huh? And that reminds me a lot of the, there's a black entertainment channel. Why can't we have a white entertainment channel? There's a Black History Month. Why can't there be a White History Month? Black lives matter, but why can't blue lives matter too? Why don't they matter too? And the thing that's frustrating about it and annoying about it is it's just so purposefully obtuse and dense. So when you have a powerful majority, you don't need to do the pride, yes, white male straight pride, yes, because there's nothing tied to that that would suggest anybody ever looked down on you for being white male and straight. There was never any systemic oppression against you. Now, on the flip side, when you have an oppressed minority, well, obviously that's a different conversation. So, for example, when you talk about white pride is historically tied to what? White supremacy. When there's a group marching down the street screaming about white pride and they have white pride tattoos, what's usually accompanied with that? KKK sympathy, neo-Confederate sympathy, swastika tattoos, things like that. Look, I'm just telling you guys what the reality of it is. Maybe there was a time when there could have been a benign, benevolent, altruistic white pride, but that's just not historically what it is. White pride is tied to those things. White pride is tied to white supremacy. It's a historical fact. Now flip the script. What is black pride tied to? The civil rights movement. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, now you can argue at times they went too far, whether it was Malcolm X calling for a black nationalism, have a separate nation that's black and have separatism, which is different from segregation. So you could have disagreements about specifics within the movement, but you cannot deny pride was a response to white pride / white supremacy, and it was an attempt to get equality. So one is tied to civil rights, one is tied to supremacy. So it's not the same. When people try to say, oh, why can't I have white pride if they have black pride? First of all, you can. Nobody's stopping you from having it. But we're also allowed to draw logical conclusions about the kind of person you are if you want to scream white pride at the top of your lungs. Sorry, except not really, because that's what it is. So just to give a few more examples here so you can see what the issue is. If you're going to defend that, okay, it's like people defending a German pride parade through a European Jewish town. That doesn't really invoke happy memories, does it? Now, again, you can't, but what? It's just even. If they can have Jewish pride, why can't we have German pride? I don't understand. What's the equality, right? Isn't that equality? Don't be purposefully obtuse and dense. Look at the history of it. One is tied to the Holocaust. The other is tied to fighting back against the oppression. So don't be ridiculous. You know, same thing if you want to look at a Turkish pride march through a Kurdish town or an Armenian town. What does that bring back memories of? Systemic oppression, genocide in the case of the Armenian genocide. So don't stop saying it's all the same when it's obviously not all the same. Now, again, I believe in free speech to my core. So I wouldn't stop that march from happening as long as it's peaceful. I wouldn't stop the KKK march through a mostly Jewish town or black town. That's a cornerstone of free speech. As long as it's peaceful, you can say whatever you want. But don't get mad at people for drawing logical conclusions and saying you're kind of just a dick if you want to scream about white pride or heterosexual pride or whatever. By the way, it's not wrong or bad to scream Irish pride. You know, some kind of pride of a group or a country or a nation where it's not historically tied to oppression and marginalization. That's obviously fine. Again, Irish pride is a perfect example. You can talk about Irish pride. Nobody's going to begrudge you that because that's not the same as saying white pride. But we know what white pride is tied to, and we know that there's a difference, and the history and the facts of it matter. So again, nobody's stopping you from yelling it. Of course you could yell it. But just don't get mad at people for drawing logical conclusions about the kind of person you are. If you're inclined to talk about white pride or heterosexual pride in a serious way or whatever the fuck it is, it ain't the same. You are not an oppressed minority if you're heterosexual. Nobody ever targeted people because they are heterosexual, whereas people get targeted all the time because they are gay. So if you want, what do you mean, no more need for a gay pride movement? Yeah, go tell that to somebody in Saudi Arabia where you can get killed for being gay. You sure about that? No more need for gay pride. Even in the U.S., obviously it's not as bad as Saudi Arabia or places like that. You still have over 20 states where somebody could get fired for being gay, or they could just kick you out of their restaurant or their establishment because you're gay. The fight ain't over, okay? And there's a difference between the oppressed and the oppressor. Just keep that in mind. You're allowed to say whatever the fuck you want to say, but when people draw conclusions about you, they're probably right. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love y'all. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place. Peace.